going to open the meeting for Senate Committee on General Government and Accountability for Monday, March 20th. And we're going to hear first Senate Bill 254. Senator Taylor.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 254 was previously heard on March the 8th. It has, as part of today's paperwork, we have a recommendation from LFO to add a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means. So if it's ready, we are missing one revenue statement on a dash three. The reason Senator Taylor wanted to appear today is because there's two minor amendments that we didn't hear the first time around, the dash two and the dash three. The dash two removes the emergency clause and makes the bill effective the 91st day after sine die, and the dash three fixes a date that I think Deanna noticed was wrong. So we're just waiting for one revenue statement on the dash.
Okay, so we're going to go ahead and have your testimony, and then we have to wait. We think we can get that revenue statement before the end of the of this meeting, so we're going to hold it to the end to finish up with it. We'll take your statement now.
Okay, thank you, Chair Riley, members of the committee. Like the administrator said, we were here before and gave our official testimony. I can go over in detail what the bill does again if you like. This is the data match and the new hire report bill. And as Ms. Ross said, we needed to have these two amendments. One is because I know that we're all trying to be mindful about using emergency clauses. This removes it but replaces it with 91 days. And the reason for that is to allow DOR to begin getting the systems in place, but it won't be effective until I believe it's in January then of 18, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. And then the other one, the dash three, is literally, it says, there was just literally an incorrect year put in. It was just, I don't know if I'd call it a typo, basically, is what it was. Yeah.
So, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue.
And Kathleen Taylor, State Senator, District 21.
Oh, sorry.
I forgot to do that.
The reason that we need the change in the Dash 3 amendment is related to the removal of the emergency clause. It requires us to have rulemaking done by January 1st of 2018 in page 4, line 23. And with the sine die effective date, 91st day after sine die, there's just no way to comply with the APA guidelines and have a rule in place by January 1st of 2018, unless we do an emergency rule, which I don't know that the stakeholders involved in this process would be, they would probably rather have time to work with us. So we're just asking for the change to go to July 1 of 2018, so we have a reasonable amount of time to actually adopt rules and work with stakeholders on getting those rules in place.
Okay, so these two amendments will take care of all that. Mm-hmm. Great. Questions? Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm going to close this work session, and I'm going to save that for later and open the session again. We're going to do Senate Bill 872. I'm going to open a public hearing on that.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 872 establishes the Oregon Department of Information Technology. It transfers all information technology and telecommunications powers and responsibilities to it from the Department of Administrative Services. It's operative July 1st, 2018, declares emergency effective on passage. There is a dash one amendment that removes the emergency clause, making it take effect the 91st day after sine die, and a dash two amendment that removes language that describes the performance of the constitutional duties when it references the Secretary of State and Treasurer. They've had that language removed from a couple of bills. There is a fiscal light and no revenue impact on both of those amendments because we are recommending a subsequent referral be added to Joint Ways and Means after it goes to the Joint Committee on Technology.
All right. Katie Kova?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Katie Koba, State's Chief Operating Officer and Director of DAS. I always want to say Department of Agriculture. Still learning on that one. Just wanted to appear in front of you briefly today to share with you the governor's position on Senate Bill 872. It is a fairly lengthy bill, and I had no intent to go through it in any detail at all. But again, to share with you what the governor's position is, and she has shared this, I believe, with the chair and legislative leadership. In essence, the governor is supporting the establishment of a standalone Department of Information Technology, which is one large component of the bill. As committee staff indicated, there is an initial fiscal impact statement on that part of the bill. We are working with the state chief information officer currently on a fiscal impact statement for establishing a standalone Department of Information Technology, and expect that there will be a fiscal, but it's not completed yet. So I did want to share that with you for the record. There's another major component of Senate Bill 872, which would consolidate all state IT procurement in the new Department of Information Technology. And this is a piece, the part of the bill that the governor doesn't support at this time. What she would like to do is ask the IT Governance Committee, which is a committee of the state's enterprise leadership team. This is a team that's made up of a number of state agency directors. And the IT Governance Steering Team works with the CIO on IT-related issues. And she would like to have this committee take some time in looking at IT procurement. This is an issue that's being discussed not only at the state of Oregon level, but at the national level as well. And both the state of Oregon's chief information officer and our chief procurement officer are members on a national task force looking at this issue of IT procurement. So in essence, what we'd like to do is take the next interim and spend some time discussing IT procurement, where it's working well, where it's not working well, what would be an optimal structure for procurement in the state of Oregon, have that steering team bring some recommendations or options to the governor, with the potential then that that work would transfer into a bill that would come before the 2019 legislative session. So in essence, again, we're supporting the standalone Department of Information Technology, but we do think some more work needs to be done on the IT procurement piece, and would ask that that be held off until 2019 legislative session.
Okay, understood. So this goes to the Joint Information Technology Committee. So I'd like to move it out of here to that committee and do that work in that committee, if that works for you.
Mr. Chair, we understood that. We have no problem with it. We just want to make sure we're on the record in the appropriate places so no one says, you know, why didn't you convey your position during general government? And staff has raised some questions more on the technical side with the bill and some of the drafting language, and I would assume that you would prefer that that work be done with the joint committee.
Yeah, just please.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Question.
Any questions? Yes. Senator Hass.
Thank you. Can you explain, I mean, it feels like it's rather obvious, but what is the policy rationale for creating a new agency as opposed to keeping it in-house? And I mean, is this part of best practices? Does Massachusetts do it this way, and they've saved money, or you know, issues? Are there things out there that we can point to say why this would make sense?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hass, different states handle it differently. There's not a standalone. This is the way it's done at state agency levels across the United States. As you well know, there was legislation during the 2015 legislative session that created the CIO position to report directly to the governor. It used to be housed within DAS and report to the chief operating officer. And that legislation changed that reporting requirement. I think it's fair to say that here in Oregon, with kind of that unique relationship, the CIO's office still housed within DAS, but the CIO in somewhat a standalone way reporting directly to the governor, that it causes confusion among state agencies. And I think this is a cleaner way of having that position be clearly stated to state agencies. And so that was, in essence, where we landed on this part of the bill. The draft, as I understood it originally, did consolidate all state IT into a new Department of Information Technology, and that was a piece that we had some concerns with, at least at this point in time in the stage, in terms of where we are with IT development and progression in Oregon. So I think there were a number of conversations, and people said, well, if you don't want to go the whole route and have a consolidated state IT system, then what about a standalone agency? And so I think that was also kind of a fallback position to that concept. And Senator Riley has been, I think, more involved in those discussions than I've been.
Well, you have a very unique sort of view into this, given your background as a leader of an agency, a very successful leader. And I just was wondering, you know, if you were to put yourself back in those shoes, say, oh, great, now there's another bureaucracy we have to go through, there's another agency we have to go through, because I mean, this is so important because the costs are so high, mm-hmm. especially when it goes wrong, you know. And so, just given your background, this feels like a smart move, a smart play to you?
Mr. Chair, Senator Haas, I think it's fair to say that the measures that have been put in place in the last few years, especially with the stage gate process that's been established, are very important. And I think we in the executive branch and agency directors, none of us want to be the next agency that fails on a significant IT project. That's not a good place to be. And I think it's fair to say that agencies were struggling with how to do IT projects successfully. And so the role of the state CIO is very, very important. And bottom line, the outcome is we want our IT projects to be successful and implemented as efficiently and effectively as possible. I do believe that there is still confusion about what is my role as COO, what is the CIO's role, why are you still in one agency, how does all that work? And I don't see a downside with creating a standalone Department of Information Technology. I think it is fair to say, as I said initially, there will be a fiscal impact associated with that. And we are working on that, and I think that's one piece of information that the Joint Committee is going to want to look at and then potentially Ways and Means if the bill goes there.
Thank you.
Further questions? Or you? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
So I don't have anybody else signed up. Does anyone else want to weigh in on this before we move forward on it? All right. I'm going to I'm going to close the public hearing. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 872.
872. Oh, 872, sorry.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -1 amendments on dated 3/8/2017 into Senate Bill 872.
Senator Brzezinski moves to adopt the -1 amendments dated 3/8/17. Any discussion? Any objection? It's moved in.
Senator Chair, Senator Riley, I now move that we adopt the -2 amendments into Senate Bill 872 dated 3/8/17.
Senator Brzezinski moves it to adopt the -2 amendments dated 3/8/17. Any discussion? Any objection? It's amended.
And Chair Riley, I now move Senate Bill 872 as amended by the -1s and the -2s to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Legislative Information Management and Technology by prior reference, and then referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Brzezinski moves Senate Bill 872 as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Legislative Information Management and Technology by prior reference, and then to be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there discussion?
Mr. Chair,
we're going to need to put a water stop or something in there along the way.
Yes. I was going to say thank you, Cheyenne, for the script.
Any objection? It is moved. Okay, we're going to...
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just for clarification, Senators DeBoer and Thatcher are excused from that.
Yes.
Yes.
True. Good catch.
So we're going to move to Senate Bill 1022.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 1022 sunsets 19 inactive government boards and commissions. This was sort of an interim staff project they were asked to do, and it was imperfect with the narrowing down of the numbers of boards up for elimination, and I've pulled a bunch of agencies that were affected and got lots of prompt feedback from them that
No volunteers.
Would further reduce the list by three or four more, plus a suggestion for some conforming edits that Department of Revenue might need, so anticipating that this will need some amendment, and I see we have some people here.
Great. So, Jake Evan Shub and Palmer Mason.
I'm surprised no one volunteered to be closed down.
Oh, there are several.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, Kevin Shuba. I am the vice chair of the OAH Oversight Committee, and Representative Holby and I have signed a letter, which I understand has been submitted to the record, in opposition to, and I believe it's sections 2, 3, and 4, which would affect the function of that committee. A tiny bit of history: back in 1999, the panel was created, which created a group of hearing officers who did the work of about 30,000 hearings a year, and this advisory committee was appointments of folks who knew the process to be a resource as that program got up and running. From time to time, we've been called upon to give advice and to consider issues. It meets once, maybe twice a year, sometimes three times, depending upon need. The members are voluntary, although appointed. I'm a private practice lawyer. I have experience in administrative law, but the other members, some of them work for the Department of Justice, and there are members from the Senate and members from the House. I would point out that the elimination of the committee is one issue that we oppose, and respectfully. And the other issue is the elimination of there's a rules advisory committee that also is the subject of the bill, and that one is relates to the Attorney General's ability to promulgate rules that affect the operation of the hearings panel, and it makes sense to have input from the hearings panel in that process, and it be formally required. And so we would like to go on record as opposing that portion of it, which I believe is Section 2 of the bill. And unless there are questions, that would conclude my presentation.
Okay, go ahead.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Palmer Mason. I'm the legislative advisor for the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality. I'm here also to talk about Senate Bill 1022 and specifically Section 5 of the bill. This is the section of the bill that relates to the Stationary Source Compliance Advisory Panel. And I'm here, and let me be clear, I'm here to say that I'm neutral on the bill, but I am raising a concern about the elimination of that advisory panel. And actually, really more specifically, the language doesn't quite eliminate the advisory panel, but it eliminates how it is structured and set up. And the reason for our concern is the Clean Air Act requires that we have this advisory panel, and it's specifically made part of a plan that we submit to the US EPA, the state's implementation plan as it's known, and that's the plan that outlines how the department will implement the various provisions of the Clean Air Act in Oregon. So in that plan submittal, it actually identifies this specific statute in Oregon law and the panel, and then how the panel is set up. So the bill here would change this advisory panel, and we think in a way that would contradict federal law and the specific provisions and the Oregon state implementation plan that's submitted to EPA. So we just wanted to get on record to raise those concerns, and happy to provide more information and work with the committee further.
Thank you. Just so everybody knows how this came about, during the interim, I asked my then administrator to do a survey of all the commissions and boards, see who couldn't find a meeting for in the last 2 years, and for those boards, send out a notice to whoever is to be notified in that board, whoever is the contact, and anyone in that group who we couldn't find a meeting for, who does not respond, we would put in the bill, and if they show up at the meeting, then we'll take them out. So, and so you guys have shown up at the meeting, so we have no problem amending the bill and moving forward with that. Senator Brzezinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So what I've just heard is that Section 3, which deals with the Office of Administrative Hearings Oversight Committee, is going to be removed from the bill?
Correct.
Okay, and I do want to put on the record, I understand the reason why that committee has not been meeting or as frequently as they would like to. It appears that we on the Senate side do not have any current members assigned to that committee. And there are 9 people, if I'm not mistaken, that make up the committee, 4 legislators, and when 2 of the legislators who are the Senate representatives aren't actually appointed or actually attending, it makes it more difficult for that committee to actually run, from what I understand. And so hopefully those who are listening in as Big Brother and Big Sister, that they will maybe appoint 2 senators so we can actually have our active role.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Senator Riley, members of the committee. For the record, Deanna Mack, Department of Revenue. And I just, based on that background you just gave, I wanted to let you know that one of the commissions that's asked being removed here is the Charitable Checkoff Commission. And we do meet annually. We have a small group of people, including members from the Senate and the House, to determine what entities are eligible for the charitable checkoff on the tax return. On a list. So we have no problem with the commission being eliminated if you want the Department of Revenue to do that work, but I just did want to get on the record that they actually were still meeting. The person that's our chair is actually not connected electronically right now, and so may not have responded to the response that you put out there in the first place. So I apologize for that. But we do meet annually. We're okay with it going away. If it does go away, the amendment that Cheyenne mentioned is that it requires anyone who's denied to be put on the list would have an appeal to the Office of Administrative Hearings. If that goes away, the Department of Revenue is exempt from the using the Office of Administrative Hearings because we have the tax court, so the appeal would need to be changed to go to the tax court instead.
Well, I think we'll just take that one off since it meets annually.
Whatever your pleasure.
Thank you. Any questions before she? Okay, thank you very much. Okay.
And Mr. Chair, there are a couple of other folks who responded with pushback who aren't present.
Anyone who actually said,
that was my understanding,
we don't want this to go away, they won't. We just wanted to get rid of the ones that that actually hadn't been meeting and nobody cares. So we're going to do that.
Sweeping them out.
Yeah, so we have amendments. So I'm just going to close this public hearing and move on to the next issue. And we're going to go to work session for Senate Bill 89.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 89 was previously heard on the 8th of March. It's the measure that modifies provisions governing a collection of delinquent accounts owed to state agencies, directing the Department of Revenue to offer its accounts for assignment to private collection agencies and requiring other state agencies to offer their delinquent accounts to the Department of Revenue only. It has 3 amendments, the first removing an emergency clause. The second is clarifying and technical changes that permit DOR discretion to assign other agencies' delinquent accounts to private collections during the first 6 months, requiring DOR to notify the originating agency if and when a debt is assigned to a private collector, directing DOR to provide private collections entities with written standards of service, and providing that originating state agencies may cancel and recall uncollectible assignments to the Department of Revenue and shall recall such assignments that are made to private collections. It restores some of the language requiring certain content in notices to debtors when set-offs are made. And the dash 3 is clarifying how state agencies may request voluntary disclosure of Social Security numbers. This touches on the same set of statutes as the dash 2 technical amendments, protecting the debtors and prohibiting use of Social Security numbers for debt collection purposes absent the kind of notice that's being required. There wasn't a specific discussion when the bill was heard on the 8th about the dash 3 amendment, and I know that DAS is in the room if anybody had any questions. On each of those amendments, there is a fiscal impact. It's available online, and there's no revenue impact. And we'll be asking the President's office to add a referral to Joint Ways and Means because of the fiscal impacts.
Okay. Since we have amendments that we haven't heard, do you want to come with?
Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, Lindsay Baker with the Department of Administrative Services. As Cheyenne indicated, the Dash 3s are related to debt collection practices generally. They open up the same chapters. However, they were distinct enough from the base bill that I didn't want to confuse members when we were talking about it in that first public hearing. So just to be clear, I hopefully have chatted with all members of the committee about this amendment to date. And it really does just provide a little bit of clarity. So right now, when an agency compels an individual to disclose their social security number for whatever reason, whether they're licensed or whatever it is, they then can ask that individual to voluntarily disclose their social security number for purposes of debt collection. It has to be very clear on that form that is a voluntary disclosure and what it will be used for. So the Dash 3 amendment just clarifies what that form and process looks like and makes sure that we are communicating out to agencies that when they ask for that disclosure, it has to be clear to the person providing that social security number.
Chair Riley, members of the committee, Gerald Floyd, DAS. I'm just here to answer any technical questions.
Great. Any questions? Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I move for the adoption of the Dash 1 amendments dated 2/17/2017.
Senator Brzezinski moves to adopt Dash 1 amendments dated 2/17/17. Is there any discussion? Any objection? It's amended.
Senator Riley, I now move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments into Senate Bill 89, dated 3/2/17.
Senator Brzezinski moves to adopt the Dash 2 amendments dated 3/2/17. Any discussion? Any objection? It's amended.
And lastly, on the amendments, I move that we adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated March 6, 2017, into Senate Bill 89.
Senator Brzezinski moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated 3/6/17. Any discussion? Any objection? It's amended.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 89 as amended by the three amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be the President's office be requested to refer it to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Senator Brzezinski moves Senate Bill 89 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the committee ask the President to refer it to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection? It's moved. All right. I'm going to close that work session on Senate Bill 89. I'm going to open a work session on Senate Bill 191.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 191 was previously heard on February the 15th. This is the measure that permits information about energy tax incentives, tourism, local government, affordable housing incentives, and environmental cleanup incentives to be added to the transparency website maintained by the State Chief Information Officer. This one is not ready to move. It has a couple of amendments. One is replacing the measure and removing the emergency clause and adding an entire opening up the amount of information that might be posted on the website. And the Dash 2 amendment also removes the emergency clause and adjusts the operative date, but it's not ready.
Okay, so I'm going to move that forward to a future date. I'm going to close work session on Senate Bill 191. I'm going to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 227.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Senate Bill 227 updates rulemaking procedures consistent with the use of digital technology and current practice. It authorizes rulemaking by the Secretary of State as to form of filings, requires electronic transmission of all rule adoptions, changes, and repeals from the Secretary of State to Legislative Council within 10 days of filing, requires agencies to report their 5-year rule reviews to the Secretary of State, and takes effect the 91st day after signing the die. There is a Dash 1 amendment that restores or retains the current existing obligation to provide notice of rule activity at least 49 days in advance of notice if it's delivered electronically. The measure as introduced had changed that number from 49 to 30. The amendment retains the original 49 days.
Right. So, Mary Beth Heckert? She's not.
And the Secretary of State's office did ask that we do this bill last in case she was late.
Okay, do we have the, what we need for?
We've got testimony from Eric Jorgensen up posted from the Secretary of State's office. That helps.
It may be that we're moving so quickly, she might not be able to make it today.
I was going to say, do we have the what we need for a 254 yet?
No, sir, we don't. But I did bring the motion to suspend and just kind of do the math to see if we have, if three people constitutes 2/3 of five for purposes of that motion.
Ah, there she is.
Oh, great, great timing.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Chair Riley, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Mary Beth Herkert, and I'm the director of the Secretary of State's Archives Division. I'm here today to testify in favor of Senate Bill 227. The Archives Division is responsible for receiving, for filing, and publishing the Oregon administrative rules from state agencies and boards and commissions. Any changes to the administrative rules are published monthly and annually. The process used to do this has not really changed in over 20 years, resulting in delays in publication of up to 6 weeks. The number of rule-making actions continues to increase, and the ability to search the online rules is cumbersome at best. Because of this, we have spent the past biennium developing the Oregon Administrative Rules database, which is scheduled to go live in June. This database streamlines the rulemaking process by allowing agencies to write and file their rules in a secure database, submit them to our agency where they are published as soon as they are verified as being accurate and complete. This means that all rulemaking actions are available to the public as soon as they are published, rather than having a 2 to 6 week delay. In addition, the rules database provides the public with a robust search engine capable of searching across all rule text and actions. With these changes, the current statutes governing these rules also need to be updated. ORS Chapter 183, as it pertains to administrative rules, is generally written for a manual rules filing process and requires the Secretary of State to produce an annual printed compilation of Oregon administrative rules. Where we once printed over 3,000 sets of the compilation, we now print 63. Or the Oregon Administrative Rules database also eliminates the need for paper filings and requests, thus the statute should be modified to fit with an all-electronic system. We've also been working with the Legislative Council to allow for the filing of rule amendments and the adoption to be filed electronically instead of agencies having to hand-deliver paper copies of these rules to the Legislative Council. Updating the existing statutes found in 183.310 and 183.325 to 715 modernizes the language so that it is technology independent and reflects the more modern process that the new Oregon Administrative Rules database will provide to filing and publishing administrative rules. Thank you, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? So it appears that everybody's okay with it. Sounds good to me. And thank you very much for your work getting this ready to go. This is going to help a lot, I believe.
Thank you. Yes, it will.
Thank you. Is this ready to move?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. So I'm going to close the public hearing, and this is not ready to move, and so and we don't have the paperwork we needed for 254.
We are missing one revenue statement, and I've, Mr. Chair, I've reached out to the revenue office to see if they're very close.
I mean, can we just carry it over to next week? Next meeting?
Discretion of the chair.
Yes, we can. Let's just carry it over to
set on the next date.
Yeah.
Thursday,
so,
or Wednesday.
So I don't need to open another session for that, do I?
No, sir.
Okay, so I'm going to carry over Senate Bill 254 to the next session of this committee, and I believe that completes our work for today. I'm going to close the session. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.